Estelle Gohill, director at 55.5, thank you so much for joining me on the Mumbrella Cast.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the biggest question of the lot here. What is 55.5 and what do you do?
That's a really easy one.
Excellent. We start off here. It gets a lot harder at the end.
We're Australia's... It always sounds like an infomercial when I say this, but we are Australia's largest...
We'll put backing music onto it. So.
We're Australia's largest independent research agency. We actually are not just Australia. We've got a couple offices in Sydney, Melbourne. We're also New Zealand, Singapore... down in Canberra as well these days. Research. We're a research consultancy, we like to say, because we do a lot more than just sort of primary research. We do a lot of the kind of wraparound stuff as well.
And, of course, research is becoming has been a key talking point within the media marketing industry for quite some time, particularly now. And the reason largely why we've got you on the Mumbrella Cast is to talk about a research project that 55.5 is doing at the moment called Australia Pulse. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it's taking a deep dive into consumer behaviours since the global pandemic, and it's based on 1,000 nationally representative interviews per month. What's the driver behind doing this? Why the interest in it, and why do it?
Very good question. I will go back to the very beginning because it's always a very good place to start. At the outset of COVID, at 55.5, we were really lucky in that we had some kind of crisis-honed leaders who had been through the GFC. And so instead of kind of going, oh dear, what do we do? There was a very immediate sense of the most important thing in this time of great disruption for our clients is going to be able to give them a set of headlights through the dark. So back then, before Australia Pulse, they launched the CCIM, as we call it, COVID Consumer Impact Monitor. Now, that was not a public piece of work. It was a syndicated study. And so we worked with clients to kind of go really deep. And I think that's kind of what differentiates it from a lot of the other... I think a lot of people went, oh, people are going to want to know about behaviour change. But a lot of that was at a cultural level, whereas with the CCIM, we worked with clients in 27 categories and went really deep all the way through to what does that mean for you at the shelf? What does that mean for you when your customers are making decisions right now, and tracked it every day? And that's so for 9 months, we were generating this tremendous trove of very broad and very deep data. So we got to beginning of this year and kind of looked at that and said, all right, well, obviously, as a syndicated study, we can't share a lot of the details of that. But what we do have is some really crystal clear themes about how culture and consumers have changed. And that seemed pretty interesting. So we took those sort of 8 themes and went, all right, well, I think the one thing we all know is that the dust is not settled yet, right? Every time there's an outbreak in Melbourne or Sydney or, you know, anywhere, we kind of all go, nobody really knows what. You know, I hate the term the new normal, but nobody really knows what life looks like post-COVID yet. So we wanted to continue tracking some of those big cultural themes, and that's where Australia Pulse has come from.
And I'm assuming those big cultural themes kind of are rapidly evolving as well, in terms of as the pandemic sort of got longer and longer, and like you said, more lockdowns in different areas, the... opinion that people had of their environment, their situation sort of began to evolve and shift with that as well. Have you seen some significant changes in how consumers are behaving and reacting during this ongoing period?
Yes, probably not as many bends in the data as at the beginning, because of course there was a lot of, oh, it's terrible. No, it's not. Yes, it, no, oh my gosh.
It's going to end. It's not going to end. What do we do?
Yeah. And some, I think the other thing is some of those became quite predictable. So when you look at things like outbreak numbers, then there are certain consumer sentiments that are tied to what those numbers look like. Whereas I think what we started to get really interested in were what are the things that are kind of having a seismic effect on culture, and we don't know where those will land. We don't really know yet, you know, to what extent we will go back to our, for example, conspicuous consumption that was all fantastic before all of this happened, but now feels a little distasteful. So that's the, they're the kind of themes that we're really keen to track, are those cultural shifts.
Yeah, so you mentioned those themes and conspicuous consumption being one of them, but can you tell me a bit more about the other themes that you've picked up from the research?
So we've got five kind of key themes that feel like they're probably most broadly relevant. There's others, things like petite pleasures that are extremely relevant if you're in certain categories, but maybe not in others. But the five that we feel like have got probably the most relevance to more brands and businesses, one of them is local living, another is continuous commerce, collective health is wealth, new values, old money, and CSR drive are the kind of five big headlines, I suppose. Which are you most interested in hearing about?
All of them, really. We don't have time for all of them, but let me ask you a few questions on local, because that was the first one mentioned in the Pulse. And I was quite interested in that in terms of the pandemic encouraging a bigger focus on local, but also it was noting that there was still a bit of a disconnect between people and feeling connected to their community as well. So now that we've got a bit more research on local and consumers within that their sort of local area, what are the bigger takeouts around that?
Look, this one's really interesting because I think local has been bandied about a lot in marketing circles, and we're seeing a lot of I'm buying local, I'm supporting local, I've got local ingredients in my product, and people feeling good about that. But it feels to us like the big opportunity is exactly what you picked up on. I think it's 4 in 10, is it? Only 4 in 10 feel connected to their community. That means there's a whole heap of people who feel like local is wildly important, but at the same time, they don't feel like they're hooked into it. And this ties in really nicely with one of our other themes, which is connected health is wealth, which starts to talk about health is really only health if it's the whole community. And so the two kind of dovetail quite nicely together, because it sort of suggests that connecting people into their communities is what's going to build healthier community, both for individuals, families, mental health, all of that stuff. So it feels like there's this amazing opportunity for brands that they're not necessarily stepping into that much in order to connect people with their local community. I think we've seen some really nice sprinklings of it. I think Telstra is doing something really nice at the minute with supporting small businesses. But specific to local, you know, what's your favourite local shop? That kind of thing. I'm sure there's better iterations of it, but it feels like that's the really rich opportunity that's not being addressed at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think marketers can really address something like local when there are so many different communities? You look at Sydney, where we are at the moment, there are so many different communities, so many different, demographics within those communities. We're kind of a city of multiple areas that are very, very different no matter where you go. Is that a hard thing for brands to keep track of and really, I guess, get into the local culture?
Of course it's a challenge, but I think that's where it comes down to, you know, pick your cause, right? And it's funny because that starts to butt up against another one of these themes, which is that CSR drive. And I think that to me is really fascinating, watching the extent to which people now expect brands and businesses to step up when it comes to CSR. And that's such an interesting space, right? Because I'm sure we've, you know, many of us have worked over the years in CSR marketing. And sort of when you work on those projects, there's this sort of really difficult fine line to walk between telling people the good work we do and chest beating. But now there's kind of an expectation that brands are doing that. It's like, yeah, sure, you've got this brand purpose over here, but what value are you actually adding for the community? So I think it's become necessary for people to solve that challenge.
Yeah, and talking about CSR, because I found that section really interesting, and one of the stats was that I believe 14% of consumers looked into the ethics and behaviours of brands, or they looked for or bought sustainably sourced products. 14%, is that enough to really get brands to drive the CSR within the business, or are they still looking at that and going, oh, 14%? It's not going to make enough difference for me at the moment.
It's become something that I think you can't ignore. I mean, it's not just about what you're buying. It's also about the brands that you're choosing based on their values. So it may not be buying a product, but it may be feeling an affinity to a brand. So I think it kind of, it plays out across all of the different touch points that a brand has, not just does it drive my product choice, but to what extent I feel connected with that brand because it mirrors my values has become extremely important, as we know from this and many other pieces of research.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to getting that out into the community as well, have you seen brands really attempting to do that more during COVID, or has it kind of stayed level where it was before in terms of there's clearly an interest in it, but maybe not as much execution?
I think you do see, I mean, the obvious examples are some of the things like the, you know, drinks companies who have stepped up and made hand sanitizer and things like that. But it definitely feels like there's a sense that brands have needed to speak to the fact that we've got some seismic issues, you know, right the way back from bushfires, really. I think this is not just COVID, right the way back from bushfires through COVID, and now the kind of impact of COVID that we're seeing across all sorts of cultural change. You know, we're seeing, you know, the rise of things like mental health. You know, you can't see something like Oprah Winfrey talking about the me, you can't see and not think, oh my gosh, this is a major cultural shift. And I think brands are answering those needs in small and large ways, starting to do things like step into mental health, step into wellness and things like that.
Let's talk about social responsibility and lock the corporate part off it, because in the study as well, I was intrigued to see a mention of the fact that consumers were focusing or starting to focus more on us rather than me or my. And the particular context around that was health and well-being. And I found that fascinating when you consider at the very beginning of the pandemic, here we all were grabbing toilet paper off the shelves in the local supermarket. Screw whoever else was out there. I'll take a couple of shopping trolleys worth of it. And it was very much a me and my, not an us. What changed? What's driven that sort of shift?
I think that's a really good question. And I mean, look, to not sound too wanky, I used to have a fantastic university professor who used to say, Plato once said, what is the good life, right? And I think over the last 12 months, you know, people have had the time and the space and the disruption in their life. Everything's changed on an everyday basis, and people have really stepped back and gone, all right, for me personally, what is the good life? You've got dads who are driving their kids to school and going, oh, actually, this is enriching my experience with my family. And you've got people, you know, who are suddenly realizing that I'm washing my hands not just for me, but I'm actually doing it to protect the people around me, or maybe I get a vaccine for the people around me. So I think there's been a real step back and a real, you know, and this sort of shines through not just this health one, there's also one about sort of values around money changing, the sense of what we value and our personal sense of what is the good life has been really challenged. It's a fascinating cultural moment.
Yeah, let me pick you up on that one as well, just randomly while we're talking about it, because that to me was fascinating as well, the fact that we're a bit more careful with our money now, but also there was, I think it was 44% of people were suggesting that times are actually quite good now, that, you know, they're not worried about money. So there's more of a conservative approach to spend, but not the worry of I'm not going to, well, for that 44% anyway, I'm not going to earn less than I was. How has that come together? Because that seems to be a bit of a polar opposite.
It is a polar opposite. So that's where you're looking at really a tale of two citizens. You're looking at the folks who are still really struggling and having difficulties, and there's a lot of examples of that coming through. You know, people, 7% who can't pay a utility bill, 6% without a meal, 4% seeking assistance from welfare or community organisations. Like, those are really sobering statistics for Australia in 2021. But then by the same token, you know, as we know, there are some categories that are thriving and that have actually done well out of this. So there's just a huge split. Yes, consumer confidence is high, but there are big groups of people within Australian society who are still really struggling. But I think the overall here is that sense of, you know, everybody stepped back and everybody said, what do I value? And that I think the overarching kind of, and I think the theme we're talking to here is what we're calling new values, old money, is that it's not tasteful to be conspicuously consuming anymore. Bling is kind of a bit distasteful to people. And I don't know if you're old enough, but I remember post-GFC things like Marc Jacobs coming out with a recession look and people saying it's no longer cool to be 80s bling. And there are real kind of parallels. It's quite interesting seeing this happen again, where you've got the Kardashians on social media saying, you know, I'm on an island, and everyone's like, yeah, look, there are people struggling right now. That is not okay. So just that real challenge of what does it mean to badge success? It all comes back to that sort of sense of, you know, we've re-challenged our basic understanding of what is the good life and what matters to me.
I appreciate that you suggest that I may not be old enough to remember the GFC, but unfortunately I am. but that brings an interesting question around brands connecting with the consumer, and they've got to do it differently now. And one of the talking points, again, in the research was using new platforms for connection and that shift to e-commerce as well. And I think what we saw very quickly from a lot of brands was, if people aren't out and about, we've got to completely change the way that we communicate with them and the way that we sell them products. And e-commerce became massive, and we saw some direct-to-consumer DTC brands doing very well also. Do you think that trend is going to continue as we sort of start to flood back out into the streets now and life is slowly returning back to normal? There are crowds and grandstands now and people in shops and trains and all of that sort of stuff. These quick shifts that brands made, will they remain?
Well, do you think everyone will unlearn how to use Zoom?
I didn't really learn how to use Zoom properly in the first place. I'm still struggling.
Oh, maybe that's a bad example. I mean, if I think about the way we do research today, you know, not having to get on a plane to talk to people in other countries, which I did this morning, talking to a medical device recipient in Florida, like, those frontiers opening up for us are not going to change. And I think in the same way with commerce, it's going to be easier. There are certain things that before we went, oh, I wouldn't buy pants on the internet. And now we kind of go, oh, it's not that hard. So I think there will be things that stay. But I think the interesting thing in the commerce piece is the extent to which it's transformed certain businesses. So I've been doing some work with talking to some leading marketers, sort of CMO type positions, for a piece of work. And it's fascinating to see, like, if you're in financial services, this has reinvented the wheel. Whereas if you're in FMCG, yeah, sure, it's changed a lot of things and there are extra considerations. You might be having the thought that you were just talking about, which is, to what extent are people going to go back to buying the way they bought? But if you're in financial services, this has completely transformed your industry in the last year. So it does differ a little bit by sector as well, I think.
So one thing I wanted to clarify with you as well from the research was, I read a line in there that said that consumers have moved from a performance culture to an anti-strive culture. I have no idea what that means. Can you shed some light on that sentence for me?
Oh, look, it's a bit, again, it's a bit of a tricky one, because we do have some people working harder than they've ever worked. And I know we've all had meetings with people where we're going from back to back to back Zoom calls and we're all going, oh my gosh, throwing our hands in the air. But I think it really comes back to that thing before about what is the good life, right? I think people have kind of realized that constant striving is not necessarily a recipe for happiness, and they're kind of really reassessing their values. And so that always on culture is starting to fragment a little bit.
Now, you're doing a lot of research around this. This is going to be a regular piece for 55.5. It's all well and good to put the research out. Are brands paying attention to what you're serving up?
I hope so. I mean, I think there are opportunities in here. I think one of the things that's really clear is, as people's needs shift and as people's behaviour shift and as they start to get a renewed sense of what's important to them, inevitably opportunities arise. And so if you're not paying attention, you miss it, right?
And it's still a bit of a risk though, right? Because like we were sort of talking about before, the patterns of behavior have changed substantially since the beginning of the pandemic. Look at the office situations. Probably a bad example sitting here now with you, being that me and you are one of the only people in the Mumbrella offices at the moment. But we've been covering a trend of brands and agencies returning to a more normal situation, or I should say pre-pandemic normal situation. Now, they might not be 5 days a week again, but they're 3 days a week or they're 4 days a week. And perhaps in the early stages of the pandemic, the industry was going, wow, maybe we don't need office space anymore. Maybe everyone's going to work from home. We can live in Byron Bay or Kiama or something, and it's all going to be fine. Do you think there's a reticence from brands to make significant shifts according to the research that's coming through, not just from you, but from various other places as well, their own research as well, because they believe that maybe it might go back closer to normal? Maybe we might see this golden pre-pandemic norm returned that we once spoke about?
Oh, it's a really interesting question. And I think it comes down to, you know, the dust hasn't settled, right? I don't think anyone really knows what normal will look like. And the example, I mean, to be honest, that's the question that we probably get asked the most often as well. What's going to happen around, you know, people going back to the office? And you can look at one industry like marketing and you can go, all right, there's pressure to go back into the office. And you can look at other industries where they've let floors and floors of their business go and there's no pressure. And it's going to take time before we understand if that's going to push great talent from one industry to the other. And so it's not, you know, that's why we're sort of looking at a macro level across Australia and we're comparing different categories and industries and businesses, because those kind of big shifts and where it all settles is really unknowable at this point.
And one other thing that I took out of this when I got sent the Australia Pulse and I opened it up and it was 7 pages. I thought, brilliant. 7 pages. This is going to be relatively simple to go through and take a look at. But what I found very quickly was the detail is still actually quite thick, in the sense that it covers quite a broad array of areas, even though, as you've mentioned, there's five sort of major topics there, but they're all quite broad. Mm-hmm. And they all have a fairly significant idea behind each one of them. Do you think there's still confusion in market from marketers trying to get their head around where do they need to be? What are those five are important for them? Where should they actually, you know, I guess invest their time and their team's time in? Because for me, reading that, I was just thinking I wouldn't know quite where to start.
Mm. I mean, that's where that tension between the headline of cultural change, like a headline of cultural change, and then the actual detail starts to come in, which, you know, I guess people pick out what's relevant to them. And it's probably easier if you're sitting anchored in a specific business and you're anchored in a specific sector. But yeah, there's so much detail, and that's where starting to pick apart things like, yes, consumer confidence is high, but within that we've got groups, sectors, we've got people who are really struggling. So it's needing to go down to that next level, which, I mean, I think people have an appetite for detail. I hope so.
Every marketer wants more information, wants more to back up their decisions. Are you finding that there's more people knocking on your door saying, what can you provide us? What can you give us? Has there been more interest since the pandemic began?
Well, we've always been busy, but I've got to say we are very busy at the minute. I think there is a real appetite to understand. That's a really good way to actually anchor it, to understand. Mm. You know, there's been an appetite to track. There's been an appetite to follow what was happening. But I think there is that moment where the world has paused and people are going, okay, well, to what extent, what do I track and follow? To what extent are people going to be the same? To what extent are they going to be different? And most importantly, how does that affect my brand and my business? And sometimes to get down to that level of detail, the only way to do it is to go and do some work, you know, do some primary work.
Moving forward, obviously you're going to do more of these and perceptions and behaviours will change. Have you seen any patterns in behaviours that would indicate where we're going? Is there an ability to kind of guesstimate where we may or where consumer behaviour may end up towards the end of 2021?
Well, that's why we've chosen these five themes. These are the ones that feel like they have changed. To what extent they swing back, like the way that we kind of think about a lot of this stuff is that, you know, there's the speed of the trajectory and then there's how long it takes, right? So a lot of this stuff has got to do with how long it takes before everyone's vaccinated and how long it takes, you know, there are economic effects that rely on a swift opening up of the borders and things like that. So it's difficult to say where the trajectory ends because we don't know how long we're in this for. But I think what we've got here, if you, you know, is some a really good understanding of what those bends look like to now, from, you know, the beginning of COVID happening to now. And so we'll continue to track that. But when we stop and when we go, all right, we're done. We're done now. It's really anyone's guess, right?
Absolutely. And I hope we are done very, very soon.
I think we all do.
Estelle Gohill, Director at 55.5, thank you so much for joining us on the Mumbrella Cast.
Pleasure.